Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women, and we know a thing or two about beer.
Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
And we're the Drunk Guys, and this week we are reading R.L. Stine's magnum opus, Revenge of the Lawn Gnomes, from Goosebumps number, 34 or something like that. Yeah, Goosebumps 34.
I feel like they change numbers in editions.
It's OG 34. I know that because I'm looking at the Goosebumps wiki right now. And they would never lie.
No.
I'm starting with a beer. So the main character of this is a kid named Joe Burton. And he's a child in the 90s. And he describes himself as kind of chubby, though it never really matters. But he does do that. So you can imagine this kid was probably usually just covered in nugs. He was just eating chicken nuggets all the time. That's how the 90s worked for my childhood. This is Covered in Nugs, a beer from Dogfish Head. It's an American IPA that's 6-7% alcohol.
Oh, God, don't do that. Fuck you.
6.7. I'm doing the hands now. By the time this comes out, that'll be thoroughly a dead meme.
But I feel like it's been dead for years, but they keep doing it. They keep breeding.
And it's a fine IPA. It's not as good as their the minute ones, but it's okay. Do we need to recap why we're doing this? Or do the people know at this point why this bullshit is happening?
Well, Jimmy had this idea that we should finally read some of those really long books we've had on our list. But there's no way we can do that and still put out a book a week, unless an episode a week about a book every week. You know the idea. But Jimmy had
book
the idea.
Week?
What if we do three really short, stupid books and giving us time to read really long books? And
fill the rest of the month with shit.
And so we put it to a vote. To the patrons, and they voted for Goosebumps.
That's only because Goose Blumps wasn't a choice.
That's true. If we could read that, we would.
I mean, we did. It just wasn't a book. It's just a picture.
And this month, they selected the theme of Goosebumps. And we each picked a book. I think, was this your pick, Jimmy?
No, this was Nate's pick.
Nate, why did you pick
it
this
was?
One?
Yeah.
No reason other than that we were looking at the list and I was like, fuck it. Okay, that one.
Because I didn't read these as a child, right? So
I didn't read them as a child. Because these are really for, I'm going to say, 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds, maybe. And I was just one or 2 years older.
Centuries.
When these started coming out, or at least when they got famous. Yeah. When they got, when everybody had them, it's kind of like, I was kind of past these, which makes me sound like a fucking asshole. But what I mean is I was just a couple years too old to be interested in these when they were the shit.
Yeah, because you were busy in your childhood. You read The Vision of Piers Plowman or whatever.
I've never even heard of that.
It's from the Renaissance. Whatever.
He read the Canterbury Tales first edition.
Yeah, as they came out, in serial form.
I edited the Canterbury Tales before the
Canterbury. How do they end?
Okay. It's so, Jeffrey, we've got too many tales here. We've got to slim these down.
Can I call you Jeff?
So anyway, I picked this totally randomly from a list.
This is one of the last ones I read as a child. I know I didn't get to number 40 as a kid.
But I read all of them. I think I had all of them.
They came out one a month. I don't know. I don't know if R.L. Stine had a ghostwriter.
Did they really come out that fast?
It was one a month starting in 1989.
Damn. Well, you could write these in about an hour, so.
It takes almost as long to read them, to write them as it takes to read them, actually. Editors were just over his shoulder, just feeding it into a printer's block.
You could definitely write this in one day if you stayed up all night. It would be easy.
Oh,
totally doable.
This is two snorts of cocaine for Stephen King. This is barely cleaning the pipes out.
All of Goosebumps is probably shorter than it.
And just as many kids. he put them out one a month, or at least they published one a month. And I think it started in 89 was the first one. And so this came out, I want to say I was in third grade. So what is that when you're 8? 95 or so? That sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know. I think the last one I bought was number 39, was like The Beast from the East or something like that.
I remember The Beast from the East, yes.
Or maybe The Abominable Snowman of Pasadena. That was one of the later ones I purchased. And then it was like, I don't know, I'm kind of getting tired of this, and I think I might want to start touching my penis soon, and I stopped reading Goosebumps entirely. But I know number 33 was the one right before this was like something about Camp Jelly Jam. The fuck was it called?
Well, speaking of which, did you say jelly? Well, okay, so this book is a kid's book. You know what kids like?
Jelly?
Peanut butter and jelly. This is peanut butter and raspberry jam stout from Indulge series from Mighty Squirrel Brewing Company.
That's a new one.
My brother got these for me.
One-time patron.
In Massachusetts. And even just opening it, it smells like peanut butter and jelly.
If you did that near a school, several children would die.
So yeah, it tastes like a stout that kind of tastes like peanut butter and jelly. Not too strongly, but that's okay. It's still good. Yeah.
Well, the main character in this book would like that because he's a little fat kid.
He's a little thick.
She's chonk.
He's a robust child.
So anyway, let's get to this plot because it's going to take 3 minutes. Joe is what I've noticed in reading two Goosebumps now this week. The chapters are all a page and a half long, and they always have to end on a cliffhanger. And most of the time, the cliffhanger is someone going, and then somebody grabbed my penis. And then you go to the next chapter, and then he was like, it was my sister. And you're like, oh, it's one of those videos. No, but it's like something happens, and then it's not scary at all. It's just like a kid who likes practical jokes. Mm. And he's
though we
the
are in our 30s, so it's definitely not scary also.
I mean, I just don't know how it was scary at all. It was just suspenseful, but I don't know. Maybe I'm splitting hairs. But he lives with his family and his neurodivergent sister, even though they don't say it.
She's definitely got OCD or something.
She's got the tisms. She she has to eat her food in like clockwise on her plate, and if any of the things cross contaminate, like if a pea mixes with the mashed potatoes, she just like shuts down for 4 days. And then there's what the fuck was her name?
Mindy? Sister, Mindy.
It's Mindy. And then there's their friend, the child who has a pituitary gland problem, Moose.
The biggest kid in the sixth grade.
It was bad when Moose. Your mom calls you Moose.
He's just big horned. And so they are just playing ping pong and razzing each other. And it's revealed after like five chapters of that. I really went on for way too fucking long.
It was so much exposition for a book this long, yet still not very much exposition because the book is so short.
Yeah, it was
I
like,
couldn't decide if it was too much or too little.
It was definitely too much. We're like, I don't think we needed a Phantom Menace to this plot.
No, the menace they needed is the next door neighbor and Moose's dad and their dad's heated fruit growing rivalry. Where they have a contest where they can grow the biggest fruit, and his dad's got the tomatoes, and the other dad is going exotic for something that was probably never heard of by a child in the 90s. He's growing cassava melons.
Well, that's new for this year. In past years, he also tried to grow tomatoes, but they're in Minnesota, and they're trying to win the blue ribbon. So it's like they're trying. It's like you can get a bigger one on clearance at the Walmart, like it, you know, they're growing complete runt griggle fruit that nobody like pathetic fruits.
Mm. Like, well, they tried the
seed potatoes they're making.
They tried to grow, you know, whatever they eat in Minnesota, a pot of melted cheese and a tub of baked beans. I don't know what they eat there.
It's definitely got cheese curds in it, right? I mean, it has to. Cheese curds and syrup.
Yeah,
syrup.
Ludfisk,
bisque.
Ludfisk, it is a Midwestern Scandinavian dish.
It's the
entirely sure what's in
it. It's the Gentile gefilte fish.
Get your gefil of this.
I think Ludfisk is like a kind of fish. It's like that specific fish, like pickled and preserved or whatever the fuck.
Just a Satan breathes on it, and then you put it in a jar, and you give it to your enemies and bad children.
It's one of those ones where, like, we live in the snow, so we have to pickle a fish and bury it in the lawn for 6 months for the cold season and live off that and our little hut in Scandinavia. And God help us, our farts are like acts of terror.
This is all this to keep Krampus away. I never got high, but I think I was once somehow, and like someone fell asleep in my house, and it was public access TV on, or like the local shitty channel, and it was Scandinavian cooking came on, and every recipe was just pickled herring. Like, well, we're making a pickled herring, and we put a cream cheese, and like, ew, that's fucking worse.
Did you ever see that tweet? It was like a guy in the Netherlands, like, so happy to have my favorite snacks. And it was like just a whole little fish on a slice of bread and a bunch of like little odds and ends. And the two were just like, Dutch people eat like a cartoon alley cat.
Yeah, it's like Heathcliff made this meal. So, so that's the setup for the book. And
so their father, what's the kid's name?
Dad. Joe.
Dad, whatever. Dad and
Joe's dad,
the kid and Mindy, they go, and Dad is like, we need to go down to the lawn care store because there's a sale on, because the dad loves gardening and putting silly things out in his lawn, like flamingos.
He has an addiction.
He does, yes.
He's also definitely got a touch of, he's on the spectrum there.
Yeah, where do you think the daughter got it? And so they walk down to the store.
The daughter got it because the mom took Tylenol when she was pregnant. That's different.
So they walk the like 10 blocks to the lawn store. And it's like, wow, there's really a lawn store you can walk to from your lawn?
In Minnesota, famous for its gardens.
They pass 703 of the 10,000 lakes.
Maybe they have all these lawn ornaments because you can't grow shit there, so you got to make your lawn look pretty elsewhere by like
just pavers,
tacky flamingos all over it instead.
I have two flamingos on my lawn, so fuck you. That's fucking classy as shit. Though one of them has like been out in the sun too long, and the pupils faded away, so it's like a blind flamingo.
Oh, which
sounds like a weird Kama Sutra position.
Oh, it does. Something with necks.
Oh, you curl one leg up, that's for sure. Eat a lot of krill out of someone's butthole.
So they
they
walk down to the lawn store and with the whole family, and they're like, okay, Dad, fine. So they go and he's like, what is there new to buy? Definitely need something new to buy to put out on the lawn. And he's like, oh, more flamingos. Like, I don't know about that. Then down in the basement, wait, gnomes. There are garden gnomes. So he's like, so he goes and buys two. And then on the way home, the buys, I forget what they, and then they name them. It's like,
because the dad names all of the things.
Hap and Chip.
And takes them home and sits them up in the lawn. And it's like, hey, look at that. But there's already something like weird, because the kid, the main character, and I've forgotten his name again. Joe, is that it?
Joe. It's very straightforward.
It's so average.
It's not Blorgdat.
No. I'd remember that one. I thought it looked at me. I thought it was smiling, but now it's not smiling. He's already like, wait a minute. Something is really weird about this.
Because they have a dog, and the dog like sniffed it, and the gnome got all, I was like, ah, and it made a scared face.
And then, they're like the weeping angels in Doctor Who.
Wow, yeah, that's a very specific reference, but yes.
Several people will get that.
Hello, welcome, nerds.
And I forget what happens next.
Mischief starts occurring, and the dog previously had kept breaking into the neighbor's lawn. And by breaking in, I mean walking across over to it. And digging the lawn up, and the dad's like, I will shoot your dog in the fucking mouth if he messes with my melons. And so they wake up, and someone's been messing with his melons again. And it looks like someone drew faces all over his melon. So they know it's not the dog. But they're like, oh, no. A melon graffiti artist has struck. And then the sister blames Joe because, you know, he's the main character. And he's like, I didn't deface any melons. That's not my style.
I think Melon Graffiti Artist is a Wallflowers album.
Oh, God, you're right.
It's definitely a beer, though. Like, how is it not a beer at this point? Is that the order? I thought first they dug something up and they.
I mean, they
dig
up the garden too. I guess, yeah. You know, like it's 50 pages and everything happens within one page, so it's really hard to determine which one happened first.
But at one point in there's the only thing I highlighted in the entire book, which is this incredible sentence. I'm surprised, Jimmy, you didn't notice this too, because it's really good. It's the day after the gnomes eat the melons.
Mm.
And he goes and he sees the melon. One gnome has an obvious melon seed in its mouth.
Yeah.
And he's like, God damn it, how did that happen? And he's like looking in its face. He's like, tell me your secrets, gnome. And he says this. The gnome stared back at me. I shivered in the heat. How did that seed get there? I wondered. How? I dreamed about melons that night. That's how you know that kid hit puberty.
Put my seed into the gnome's mouth.
Yeah. And then the gnome's like, please, no. No more.
Gnome.
No.
But yes, they keep, bad things keep happening in the lawn. They keep blaming the dog and the kid. And things get crazy. But the kid is like, I know it's the gnomes because I see them. They look different when I look at them sometimes. And sometimes I go out there and they're gone. And everyone's like, kid, shut the fuck up about the gnomes. I will punch you. This is the Midwest in the 80s.
Multiple times the parents go like, really? And they look at the gnomes and they're like, the fuck is wrong with you? I believed you for a minute.
I was willing to entertain this idiocy.
And then he's awake in the middle of the night and like looks out on the lawn and the gnomes are gone. So he goes downstairs to like a down outside to look and there's like foggy or something. And then his sister, Mindy, catches him. Why are you going downstairs? He's like, I think he said something about his neighbor's garden. I'm going to screw up his garden or dig in his garden. And then next day, his garden is defiled, and everyone's like, you did it.
Who fucked my melons?
He says, like, just kidding. I'm going to check on the gnomes. And the sister's a fucking narc, and she snitches hard on him.
She does. Yeah, she's a narc.
And because that's the day when someone breaks the melons, I think. And at some point, this is so stupid. Then throughout the whole book, you know, this is the detail of the mystery that we're supposed to like not really pay attention to, but matters. They're painting their house. And then the gnomes are like, they dump paint on the guy's car.
Yeah, they're escalating to actual crime now.
Like grand vandalism or whatever fuck it's called. Like, this is not just fucking a guy's melon. Because you're lonely. And every time the kid cannot think of another way to communicate this, and he's like, I'm telling you, it's the melons. And like, I feel like the parents were like 12 hours from institutionalizing him. Like, he gets it from remember your Uncle Carl? It was from, he was, he had this. The Midwest. Your Uncle Otto. He's a more Nordic name.
Is Otto a Nordic name?
I think it's Dutch. I don't know. My head. My dad had an Uncle Otto growing up. He was definitely Dutch. I found out.
That the only one I know is Otto von Bismarck. I think he's German, right?
It's Teutonic at the very least.
Yeah. It's a, yeah.
We ought to know this.
I'll tell you, my dad's Uncle Otto had an estranged wife and child at the start of World War I and then tried to use that as an excuse to get out of the draft. And it's like, I'm a father. I can't go into the war. And there's newspaper articles where a judge ordered him to go to boot camp. It's like a fucking 80s sitcom. They were like, you must go to war. So Uncle Otto, his legacy is large in my family. And he was Dutch. I don't know. It's close enough. So they... this is fucking happening. And then the kids slowly... Moose sees them, the elves, the fucking gnomes move. Moose probably wants to eat one of them. because he's both Sloth and Chunk from the Goonies.
They catch him in the act.
Well, because the gnomes are going to dump a bucket of paint on Joe's house. Now it's even bigger vandalism. Because you can't take your house to a car wash.
They start slashing tires and burning things down.
Yeah, one of the gnomes is his improvised a pipe out of tin foil, and he's smoking crack.
Is he planting cocaine in my car? Is he calling the cops?
He's writing, "It was all the Jews' fault," and then taping that around a brick. What is he doing with that?
They're really escalating.
Why is he writing "Helter Skelter" in blood on that wall? So eventually, they catch the gnomes in the act, and Moose goes full blindside, and he just tackles one. And they're like, "Not now, Moose!" And he's about to like dominate it sexually, and they're like, "Stop it!" And he's, "What are you doing?" And they're like, "We are slaves." The gnome starts speaking. And they're like, "We have been taken here against our will from our homeland. we can't help being mischievous. That's what we are. We're mischief gnomes. Like, we don't make shoes or cookies. We just do little pranks. It's in our nature. We just want to go home, though, to our land.
And play pranks on raccoons like we usually do.
And the occasional drifter.
They are delicious.
In the basement of that lady's three-story garden store are of our brethren. We must free them. And then the kids go, "Oh, okay, we misunderstood this whole thing. This is our chance to be the Harriet Tubman of the gnomes." And we're gonna go save them. All right, let's. And then they walk.
At the middle of the night,
yeah.
They're like, "Fine, we want to get rid of you. Like, we just want to get rid. We just get rid of the shit. We just
stop
get over.
Fucking
we go
with
there.
My dad's melons."
In the middle of the night,
sensitive about.
And
them.
Then they go into the basement.
It's a gland issue.
And then they like break in through a window, go into the basement, and instead of like being like four more gnomes or six more gnomes, they're like 600. It's like, oh no, this felt kind of like a Holocaust story for a second, but it wasn't. Instead, all the gnomes look up at them or do something, and then it's like, oh shit, that was a lie. And then the gnomes are like, "You believed us, you fucking idiots.
We said we were mischief gnomes, dumbass. We're doing a mischief."
And that, and so now there are hundreds of gnomes in the basement, and they're all like, "Ha ha ha!" But yet, and then their dog, and so, but then they're like, "Oh no!" And then like the three chapters, which is collectively only six pages, where they are like trying to escape. One of them is that their dog has followed them to the store and is going to like. Tries to get in, but then doesn't. And it's like, oh, the dog will save us. And it's like, here. No, Killer's the dog in the other book.
Yeah, but Buster?
Spike. Buster, that's right. Buster. Yeah, come on, Buster. But he doesn't. The dog just like, whatever. Even though, to dogs, little things that like scurry around are like, dogs just want to murder them. So like, you would think
these gnomes are like 3 feet tall. They're not that little.
Okay. I was picturing them as a little bit shorter, but yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah, and there's hundreds of them. So yeah, the dog is like, oh, fuck that. I'm not going in there. This is at the point where the gnomes are, I think, trying to murder the children, actually. They're just like, bend them, fold them, fold them. I was like, what the fuck does that mean? Or like, shit like that. Like, oh, they would actually kill them.
Yeah, they're making them into paper airplanes? Yeah. Is that what it is?
How mischievous.
And then because Buster, the dog, walks away from the window, doesn't come in, Joe is like, wait, I've got an idea. I'll blow the whistle, because he's got a dog whistle, which had been introduced earlier in the book as like, oh, the dog can hear it, but we can't. So he goes to blow the whistle, and then the gnome like knocks it out of his mouth. Like, don't you dare smoke that cigarette, you know. But he picks it back up, blows the whistle, then all the gnomes like are frozen in place. It's like, oh, the gnomes, that was the secret. They weren't afraid of the dog. They were afraid of the dog whistle. That was the thing that defeated them. So then they just...
Which doesn't make any fucking sense.
No, not at all. And then Joe and Mindy and Moose, they just walk back home. They're like, well, that was weird. And then the next day, the dad is all sad because, oh, my gnomes were stolen. And there's like somebody splashed black paint all over the house. What the fuck? But then...
They buy a lawn gorilla and the gorilla winks at him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's the twist ending.
That's the end.
Yep.
I don't remember if they all have a twist ending in the last two sentences, but I think they probably do.
The other one does.
Yeah.
The other one we've already read.
Yeah. So then they defeat the gnomes. Though we did, there was one line I really liked in there. When they sneak into the gnome basement, it says, "A sharp smell, like vinegar, filled the hot, damp basement. Sweat, I thought. Gnome sweat." What?
Everyone knows that gnome sweat smells like vinegar to me.
Because I guess if the dad could think that these were real lawn gnomes, they had to be ceramic, right? If you touched them when you picked them up and they were fleshy, he'd notice that. Or do they turn back and forth? I don't know. If they're ceramic, they can't sweat.
They're like fleshy, you'd notice. Just tiny golems.
Yeah, they change.
I don't know.
But yeah, So it's been 30 years since we read this. Does it hold up, Michael?
You know, I think at this point in the series, RL was already running out of steam, even though it would continue. It would limp along for another 75 books.
And other series.
Oh, there's so many. I mean, this wasn't even his first big series. He had Fear Street. It was earlier, right?
I thought Fear Street was after. It was for older kids.
I'm pretty sure.
Somewhat concurrent.
Yeah, so this guy was writing two or three shitty books a month. That's impressive in his own way.
He's a child's Tom Clancy.
A lot of cocaine.
They might have been almost exactly concurrent. Because the book started in...
There were definitely less Fear Streets.
It was for older kids, so I never really read those.
Older being, 12.
Yeah, there was just significantly more finger banging in them, I think. The main thing.
I mean, I remember the first Fear Street was like... Noticeably, as a child reading it, like, this is noticeably different. Like, it was like you had to play tag in the neighborhood once a year with a dead kid, and if he caught you, like, you died. I was like, oh shit, this is like a higher stakes, certainly. It was like Manhunt, but with a ghost.
Oh, you were right. Goosebumps only started in 92, Fear Street started in 89. That's how you
got Fear Street's older.
I got my dates of stupid children's books confused. So Fear Street was a little earlier. Okay. But they overlapped.
Like, hey, these aren't working. I better write for dumber, smaller kids.
And it made them way more money.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. That's a Scholastic catalog.
Yeah, that's where the money is. He probably was half of the Scholastic catalog.
I mean, they kept those books, like all of them were in print for probably 12, 13 years. They were still printing book one, I remember when in my third grade classroom, like, kids would bring in all of their Goosebumps. Pile them up on their table. And I guess the teacher was like, I can't say no to books.
Yeah.
And then you'd have like a fortress of Goosebumps books.
It's better than not reading at all.
I'm not sure if everybody read them. I think this might have been the start of the Pokemonization of everything.
No. Pokemon was in...
96.
Middle school, yeah.
But, the idea of you have to collect all of them.
Yeah. It was definitely the largest children's book series.
Well, there was the girls' version. There was Babysitter's Club. And those were...
Did they have 60 of those?
Well over 100.
Jesus.
And there's also... I know this because my daughter's reading them now. The Babysitter's Club Little Sister, which is like the babier version. And there are 120 or so of those.
Goddamn, that's a lot.
Yeah, they were just... that was the model. There were so many of these series that I met. Fucking Boxcar Kids or whatever that was called. That was like a mystery one.
I feel like those were old. Was it the Bobbsey Twins?
I think Goosebumps and these other series that we grew up with were copying something that already existed. There was like the Choose Your Own Adventure books. Those started in the earlier 80s, and there were like 1,000 of those. Mm. And those came out on a routine, so you just get the next one. And a lot of them sold kind of subscription plans. You join the Goosebumps Club and you just get the next one mailed to you every month.
Not a bad
deal. And they bill your parents $3? but it was around this time that I checked out because the Lawn Gnomes one was pretty fucking dumb. So I didn't like it then. And man, is it didn't hold up for me. What do you think?
My main criticism of the book, I mean, it's a kid's book.
Derivative.
So. Unimaginative at best. No, as a kid's book for like little kids, like, you know, 8, 9. So it's like, oh, you know, the plot and the characterization was thin, shallow and pedantic. No, my only real solid criticism is the gnomes are not doing revenge.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I also had that question. Like, what are they? What's the revenge?
They're not revenging. They're just doing their thing. They could be like attack of the lawn gnomes, sure. But it's not revenge lawn gnomes. Nothing was done
Avenge.
To them. Revenge. Why call it that?
I think, because it just sounded like a B movie from the 50s.
I straight up went back and looked like, is this a sequel? But because they do sequels in the Goosebumps. They have three Night of Living Dummies and shit. But like, no, this is the only Lawn Gnomes one. So Revenge of the Lawn Gnomes is a dumb title. I took off a star for that.
So you gave it 0 stars?
I gave it 3. It was fine.
Maybe the revenge is because they were fucking enslaved. Check your privilege, Jimmy.
But then in the end, they said that they weren't really. They were doing mischief. That was this thing they made up to fuck with them.
But, like, they still had to get captured from somewhere. Like, did this lady in the Minnesota lawn care store
animate them? She got them from a wholesaler.
Necronomicon?
She got them from a fucking wholesaler. And this is what they do. They get spread around and they do mischief. They weren't stolen. Someone didn't, like, cut down a forest and say, wow, all these lawn gnomes are just here in this forest. I'd better sell these to lawn ornament stores.
They were enslaved, Jimmy. You just didn't read Gnome Amistad, where you learned about how they got
Gnomestad,
there.
Please.
Gnomestad, yeah, of course. Obviously. Yes, in the 8-part television miniseries, Newts.
I would watch that.
Nobi!
Yes. Now, that was my only criticism. Besides, it's, you know, a dumb kid's book, but the title was stupid.
I didn't realize until we read the second one, but man, are these formulaic.
So. Oh, of course. Yeah, there's only one. That's how you do them once a month. So this is your, how is popping your Goosebumps cherry, Nate?
Yeah, I read this one first. This was my first Goosebumps. It is
40 years late.
Pretty dumb. I was unsure. I mean, it is like objectively bad, but also like for kids' books, it might actually be okay.
Yeah,
like,
it's fine.
That's the
when
thing.
You're eight.
I'm like, as for me, I was like looked at how many pages are left every 3 pages,
and it was always
so that
very
means,
many.
That means about every 45 seconds. Yeah.
You could read this like a flip book.
How many pages are left? So yeah, not good, but like for a kid's book.
It's fine.
But yet at the same time, I feel even for a kid's book, it could be better. Now
he wasn't going for the
Calvin. It's too much. It's looking too deeply to try and like deconstruct the plot, and then reconstruct the plot into a way that would have been more exciting. Because that's not what these books are for.
These books are for making
but it
money.
It could have been better.
Well, there could have been some like red herrings, like some other potential explanations or like other characters to potentially blame.
Lawn
being so painfully obvious the whole time.
Or something in it that's like actually clever, because there's nothing clever about these. There just isn't. There could be something funny for like, you know, the stuff that parents are supposed to get. You know,
well, this is not a book for like
understand.
This isn't Goosebumps weren't really for like kids to get read to by their parents. Like this was like books you read.
It was
your
just
own.
It's a little bit past that. It's like kids reading their first chapter books.
Yeah.
Now, if they had named one of the gnomes Noam Chomsky, that would have been
surprising. Yeah.
Or like if it was like the father was a linguist and he was. Arguing about universal grammar occasionally. Deep Noam Chomsky reference.
No, he's just a guy obsessed with growing big tomatoes in Minnesota.
Check out the melons on my neighbor.
Check out those melons, yeah. Or made a few melanin jokes or the lack of it in Minnesota. I don't know.
I for a second there, I thought you were saying melaninja. Like,
oh.
Like a black ninja. I don't know what a melaninja is. Trademark. No one should obviously no one should ever read these. Children should read them, I guess. You know, but
yeah, kids can read them.
I mean, I see my kid reads. She reads chapter books now, and they're like this kind of thing. Babysitter's Club. She's a girl. She reads the Babysitter's Club ones. They're really fucking terrible books, but she's reading them. She's reading. She's like burning through these things. That's awesome. So I guess in that way, like, good for you, R.L. Stein. You got kids to read more books. That's good for the world.
It's better than a kid being on the TikToks.
Absolutely. What a simpler time 1995 was. Where it was either this or you were torturing a dog you found in a playground somewhere because you were still playing outside of your house.
Yeah.
Or you'd go to somebody's house to play Sega Genesis or try to view a picture of a dead body on dial-up internet. It was just a simple way to do it.
Or depending on where you lived, you just
the salad days of the 90s. Go to
Rotten. We got three more of these, so that should be interesting. Or not.
Interestingly, we chose all ones later in the run.
I chose the one I remembered the best.
We didn't even choose the original, so that'll be interesting. But, you know, we could just do six solid years of just Goosebumps, and that could be every week. Like, that's how many there are.
No. 300?
There's probably 200. There's, like, if you count all the sub-series and stuff. Oh, yeah.
Jesus, I don't want to.
He's still
that.
Putting shit out. He's
I'm sure still that I'm sure that out. Podcast exists.
We did an episode with them.
did we?
With Geesebumps or whatever that podcast was called.
Oh, so Nate, this wasn't your first time.
Oh yeah, that technically you're right. We did that other one. I do remember that now.
I don't remember which one
and
we read.
I do remember it being really stupid. It was about werewolves.
Yeah, I made like one of the greatest puns of all time. When they talked about the font, and I said it was Helvetica. Not Times New Wolfman.
Oh, yeah, okay. Hopefully you remember your second time, Nate.
Have you been popped frontsies and backsies on Goosebumps?
Ooh, true.
And that's something the Lone Gnomes should you revenge.
Broke your high man.
I don't want to do this anymore. Tell us what you thought.
Okay, tell us what you thought. Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
You can thank the patrons for voting for this, and you can join their esteemed company by going to patreon.com/drunkguysbookclub, supporting the podcast, or just leave us a review.
And you can support us emotionally by joining us on Goodreads and telling us nice things about ourselves so I stop hating myself.
And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters, and thanks for listening.